Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
A lot of people trying to mess with C.J. Stroud today. I'm going to tell you why you don't mess with C.J. Stroud. Because when you mess with C.J. Stroud, Seth, you are messing with the player who, according to data put out yesterday, period of March 1st, 2024 through May 31st, 2024, basically Q1 of the NFL business year, nobody moved more jerseys than C.J. Stroud.
Ooh.
Number one. You know how I am with jersey sales. Number one in jersey sales for March 1st. Number two, Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback on the planet.
Yeah, it'll pick up for him someday.
That kid's going to he's going somewhere.
He needs some advice from C.J.
Right.
Pat Mahomes probably can't wait. He probably can't wait until that matchup in December when he can hopefully get a few seconds of advice from C.J. Stroud,
you know,
in midfield.
It's funny. I meant to say that earlier, like when we were talking about the C.J. Caleb Williams thing. Like, as mad as people in Chicago were getting and people who love Caleb Williams, like Nick Wright, were getting about C.J. Stroud giving advice to somebody who he's only 3 weeks older than or whatever it is. If C.J. were to walk up to Josh Allen, like, after week five, the Texans beat the Bills here, and say, hey, bro, look, you're going to be a great quarterback, then I would see, like, on Monday, everybody getting a little agitated with C.J.
Okay, this is the difference, and this is why Chicago people are so sensitive about this right now. And Florio, who just is a... Florio's got some deep-seated psychological issues. I think it's pretty obvious. So he puts enough stuff out there, and you can tell by what he gets emotional about that he's got some issues.
And
so,
Florio just cracked me up. I don't know why.
This is the problem they're having, is that if you do the little exercise of, okay, let's swap roles. Let's look at the way C.J. Stroud has operated, the way he's taken advice, the way he looks almost kind of, going back to the Elite 11 days, he looks kind of just surprised and flattered that people even know who he is still.
Yeah.
You know, like Matt Stafford, he was like, he said that Matt Stafford was nice to him, and that was nice. Like, it was really cool that he was nice to me. Okay, if you just flip roles, and if Caleb Williams had gone into the NFL a year earlier and was Offensive Rookie of the Year, what would CJ's response have been if Caleb Williams was trying to give him advice at midfield after, say, the Colts game last year or the after the Ravens game, the first game of the year?
Yeah. I think CJ would have listened.
He would have been very receptive to it.
I think
And I think that's that's the big the problem. The reason Bears fans are getting so upset about that exchange is that even though I can totally excuse the way Caleb Williams looked either dismissive or just wanted to get the hell out of there. I get that, and I understand that. The problem is, it does fit in perfectly with the narrative that I've resisted. I try to resist narratives about guys' attitudes and whatnot coming out of college, but man, it fits in perfectly with that narrative. And if you're a Chicago fan that suffered through decade after decade after decade of wandering in the darkness when it comes to trying to find a quarterback, it hurts. Like, he's just feeding the narrative right there.
Yep.
He's feeding the narrative.
Here are the top 10 in the jerseys. CJ 1, Mahomes 2. How about the fact that the Lions have three of the top eight guys? Aiden Hutchinson, 3. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 4. Joe Burrow, 5. Jalen Hurts, 6. Saquon Barkley, who Eagles, so that's a new one. That's a new one, so that stands to reason. Jahmyr Gibbs is number 8. Micah Parsons, number 9. Brock Purdy, number 10. You know what? Maybe Brock Purdy is going to get the $60 million. He's 10th in jersey sales.
Yeah, you're very skeptical about that.
I
look at, man, all right, I think that the 49ers aren't going to overthink this unless he keeps playing the way he did last week versus the Vikings. But I don't think they're going to overthink this. They have a quarterback that they feel they can rely upon and that is capable of obviously taking them to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Or potentially winning a Super Bowl. Then they're not going to overthink it, and he gets that contract. They've whiffed on Garoppolo, they've whiffed on Trey Lance.
Yeah,
do they really think? Oh well, Brock Purdy's just not quite good enough. This is when we're gonna start being careful about how we spend on quarterbacks.
Yeah, you may be right. He's 10th in jersey sales. That's changed my opinion.
I think the fact that the Lions are up there, there's a little bit of the same thing probably going on with the Texans. A, you have an exciting team that's on the rise, very easy to like by the local fan base for various reasons, good personalities on that team, good players.
Yeah.
But also, there's not a lot of people out there with recently purchased jerseys. So
yeah, that's fair.
Most of the jersey money has gone towards Astros players the last decade or so Houston. So I think, yeah, now is when you start swinging back the pendulum to some of these young, exciting guys. Likewise, in Detroit, a lot of people just didn't bother spending money on Lions jerseys the last decade
or
so.
Nobody gets a better gauge on the jersey, kind of the jersey, you know, how it's spread out amongst fans, you know,
the
like
jersey market.
Which Texan fans, like, who's the most popular jersey? Nobody gets a better gauge than you and I because we're out there for the pregame show and we see all the jersey wearers out there.
Yeah.
So 2 years ago, it was hard to find fans wearing jerseys of current Houston Texans. That's just the fact. It was all J.J. Watt and Andre Johnson, you know, some clownies and things like
that. There were a lot of Roy Lopez's because there were a lot of people that just like, hey, my last name's Lopez,
right.
You know. So there, there were more Roy Lopez's than you would expect. If Roy Lopez had worked out,
yeah.
I think there were so many Lopez households would be like, hell yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Or you had a lot of people with Seth Payne jerseys that did that thing they did with David Carr jerseys, where they just put tape over Carr and put Schaub on it. You know,
yeah.
They put tape over Payne and they just wrote Lopez on it. For their
I saw a guy
91.
In a 91 jersey before Roy Lopez got here, and it was,
a Moby?
I was like, ah, it was weird. I was like, that can't possibly be a Seth Payne jersey. It was down in League City,
yeah.
I remember. And, it was a Moby Okoye. But this is like 10 years after a Moby Okoye was gone.
That's funny. As far as
I talked to the guy. I was just curious. I didn't say who I was or anything, and he had no clue who I was.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I didn't want to be like, hey, you know who you say also have that number.
No, but if he was like a diehard Texan fan and he knew who you were, that would have been the weirdest day ever. He's in his number 91 jersey, and in comes the original number 91, happens to be in the same store as him or wherever the hell you were.
I would, not wearing a mic or anything. If I see that out in nature, if I have a Sharpie on me, which unfortunately I never do, I would, yeah. I'd be like, hey, you want me to sign that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't feel like that was egotistical or anything. They'd be like, okay, this guy's a diehard.
Yeah, man.
Who the hell has a Seth Payne jersey unironically these days?
Unironically. So Michael Mulville is a media reporter. Mulvihill is a media reporter, and he tweeted this yesterday. Guessing game. Through week two, which NFL team is showing the largest percentage increase in local viewership? The gap between this team and the second biggest growth team is enormous. Care to take a stab, Seth, on our Houston-based radio show as to which NFL team is showing the largest percentage increase in local viewership?
You know, when you sent this to me yesterday, I did. I assumed that's why you were sending it to me, but I tried to think about it, and I thought maybe it would be Chicago or something, just based on the quarterback. But Houston. It's Houston.
It's Houston. Yeah, 60. Houston local viewership ratings are up 67% through week two.
Does that account for the fact that it was also Sunday Night Football?
Well, of course it accounts for it, but it doesn't. But that's probably something that needs to be mentioned as part of the numbers. Is like we should mention they had a primetime game.
Yeah, if it was a noon game for week two, I don't think it would be as big a leap. But it's been you can feel this. You can feel this on the streets, Sean. I'm on the streets a lot.
I know you are.
And on the streets, I've felt it. I've sensed it. Compared to week two last year, where I think everybody liked D'Amico, but we were very much, as a fan base, in wait-and-see mode. We could tell that out at the pregame show before the Colts, that everybody kind of had one toe in the water, and not even their big toe. There's maybe like they're trying to, if they were flexible enough, they were putting their pinky toe in the water. And this year, it's obviously a lot different.
Yeah, I think, 67% is 67% is remarkable. The fact that the second place team in terms of local viewership growth is the Falcons at 10% increase is crazy. That's wild.
Erin Kapner just texted me a photo of her in her Seth Payne 91 jersey.
Oh yeah,
which is which I know she wears. She proudly wears the Texans games. She works for. She's one of the best. She's like one of the most vital employees at Odyssey.
Oh yeah,
basically makes the trains run on time at Odyssey.
She's the glue of this place.
She proudly wears her. Which I think also probably has most people thinking that she's either my wife or sister or something like that.
Yeah,
because she's she's the only Seth. We have one of our listeners that comes to games wearing a Seth Payne jersey.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as the viewership being up by
60%. Sorry, I didn't mean to sound surprised.
We've seen him at the pregame before.
I know, we have, yeah.
We have the one who has it, and it says unbearable on the back. That's a Seth Payne jersey.
Yeah.
By way of an incident that happened several years ago that we don't need to talk about.
That's right.
Instance in which I was called unbearable by Mike Meltzer. Mm-hmm. 19 times in 30 seconds. It was
a legendary moment.
Yeah. A lot of change. Just changed who I was as a person. I feel like I'm less unbearable these days.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Mike was right to call me unbearable in that moment, even though I still maintain that I was correct in the argument that I was having with him. I'm going to call him after the show just to remind him of that.
That's got to exist on the internet somewhere.
Just because I threw a $20 bill at him, he thought that was unbearable in that moment.
It's a great barb, though. You know. So what were we talking about here? Oh, a lot of people pointing out the Lions and the Texans both have new uniforms also. I'm not going to let you people bringing up actual facts rain on my CJ Stroud jersey parade, okay?
You know, the new uniforms I like a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah, they look better in games.
I'm not usually all that worked up about uniforms and everything, but even in the Hall of Fame game, remember, it was a little bit confusing because they looked similar to the Bears uniforms.
Yeah.
That's why I was glad that the Bears wore their all-orange uniforms. Because it's that dark, dark, dark blue looks a lot like the Bears' dark, dark, dark blue.
Yep.
But the first two games of the season, I felt like the uniforms really popped. I'm a big fan of the new ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they look really, really good. We get our first taste of the alternate uniforms, I think, week 5 against the Bills is a color rush, the H-Town blue. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure it's week 5.
It's the black and the H-Town blue ones.
The black, yeah, the dark blue with the light blue H on the side of the helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah, those. Yeah. I think we get those against the Bills. Just got back. This is a text from Choppa and Alvin. Got back from a cruise on Monday. Watched the game in the middle of the Gulf under the stars with unlimited drinks and hundreds of fans. Was freaking awesome. Tell you what, man, if you're not going to watch the game at the stadium, that's pretty good right there. Watching it outdoors on the deck of a cruise ship at night with an open bar. Oof.
Well, and probably, you know what's fun too is when you go to a sports bar or something outside of Houston these days,
mm-hmm.
and people are actually interested in the Texans game.
Yeah.
If they're not playing the Cowboys or something, it could be the Texans versus the, let's say, I don't know, another nondescript, the Colts or something.
Yeah.
And people are like, they know about the Texans. I mean, it's cool when I'm traveling. I was in Oregon yesterday, and I hear some guy, I'm in Oregon today, but I hear somebody yesterday talking about the Vikings versus the Texans and getting a lot of things wrong, but I just wanted to get my pizza and get the hell out of there.
No! You gotta set him straight, Seth. Rando guy in Oregon pizza joint.
Well, actually, here's where you're wrong.
Give me that marker. Okay, here. And you just start X-ing and O-ing on the wall. That would be sweet. Hey, speaking of that Bears game, the Bears game on Sunday, if you need more proof of Swarm, the credo of Swarm, here's Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet, tight end for the Bears, who got absolutely obliterated on a play by Jalen Petrie that was originally called an illegal hit, and then they went back and looked at the replay like, oh no, that was actually just with his shoulder into Cole Kmet's chest. That's all it was. Cole Kmet said this is the hardest he's ever been hit.
I did try to sell it for a little bit because it wasn't like a head-to-head thing, but I mean, he got me clean. That was a clean hit.
Yeah.
And then got to the ground, and I did have to take a second because I was like, whew, man, that was a... That was quite the hit there, and they did throw the flag initially, but then they ended up picking it back up. But
to answer your question, somebody would have had to probably carry me to the plane to get home. That was a good hit.
It was a good hit. It was a clean hit. It was a clean hit.
Cole, where does that rank as far as hardest hits you've taken in your career?
That's probably the hardest. Now, that being said, I was like fully relaxed. Not that I wasn't expecting it, but I was more focused on catching the football, so like you're not like tensing your body up.
Yeah, he held on to the ball. that was pretty impressive. Yeah.
And that was, man, remember from the original angle, it looked like it might have been helmet to helmet. Yeah. Credit to Petrie for really, I mean, that was a nice, clean, legal football hit.
Yeah.
That's something that, oh, why am I blanking on this? The safety who ended up in Kansas City.
Tyrann Mathieu.
Justin Reed.
Justin Reed.
Sorry, yeah. Justin Reed has really got really good at the clean legal hit.
Yeah.
And he wasn't as good at it his rookie year, and then he figured it out along the way. There are a lot of good safeties and or nickelbacks that have figured that out. I think Petrie is hopefully one of those guys. I was trying to think. That was with about 4 or 5 minutes left in the game. I'm trying to remember when Will Anderson's sack was, because on Will Anderson's sack, Cole Kmet was running a play action where it's supposed to look like he's run blocking, and you try to dupe Will Anderson a little bit, but then he's supposed to convert into a pass blocker. Cole Kmet looked like he was shrinking away from contact, like a fourth grader who's never played football before. A kid who hasn't learned how to water boy it yet and learned how to be physical. And I wonder, oh God, I got to go, I'll look at this during the break. I gotta see if that was after the big hit by Petrie, because that's a bad look for Cole.
Well,
Cole Kmet block in that instance.
If Petrie's hit was with only like you said, like 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, it was definitely before, because it was the Anderson sack was definitely before that. So because Danielle Hunter's the one who had the sack late in the game. They each got sack. Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Man, tomorrow's Football Friday. That's going to be fun. We're going to keep getting you ready for Vikings and Texans. Battle of a couple 2-0 teams. Let's circle back to the Astros. It looks like it's almost a lock as to where the Astros are going to be come playoff time, seating-wise. But it's far from a lock as to who they're going to play. And there's some really interesting scenarios. Which of these do you prefer? We'll give you your choices coming up next.